Cameron hits her mic.
This has been a crazy episode. Okay, so again, behind the curtain, this is our third shot at this. We've had some technical issues, but we think we're good. We think we're okay. We're going to give it a shot anyway, and hopefully we'll make it this entire episode. Because we do have a very special guest that we want to talk to tonight, and we'll get to him momentarily. And I hate that we missed the first one because I was really messing with Cameron, and she was handling it so well. Right? Would you say you were handling it well?
I was actually talking.
I know you were talking, and you're talking now. Maybe we can keep this going.
Maybe.
So we're going to do five questions. We do that with five random questions at the end of this episode with most of our guests. How about you do, could you do all five questions?
All five?
Could you do, okay, what about this? Do three of the five.
I can probably do three of the five.
Okay, so you start working on that.
Okay.
But you can't write them down. They got to come off the top of your head.
I won't write them down.
Oh, we love five questions. And want to thank Gavin, who's working so hard, making sure it works, the whole Hueytown radio and TV crew. We cannot do this podcast without them. They are the glue that holds it together. I'm just here and just a talking head. Jordan, want to thank Jordan. Jordan finally got his first opportunity to be a part of the broadcast. And unfortunately, Jordan was better than Cameron. And when you listen to that episode, you're going to find out why. Cameron finished last in the Mount Rushmore. Grant Lowe, welcome. And do you see it? Do you think we're too tough on Cameron? Grant, what do you think?
No. I think you're doing good. Thank you for having me. Pressure is a good thing. I've had plenty of it in my life.
It makes you better.
It does.
It makes you stronger. Grant, so we're going to talk about Mission 44.
Okay.
And the great work. It's a nonprofit. And, you know, you'll find out that you listen to the episode what you do and the big difference that it makes. But before we do that, we always try to talk about people that grew up in Hueytown. So are you from Hueytown? Did you grow up?
Yeah, I've been in Hueytown my whole life. So
okay.
I'm actually, oddly enough, I'm 44 years old. So Mission 44 is fitting right now.
That is.
But yeah, I've been here my whole life. I went to school here, elementary, middle school, high school, the whole nine yards. So
did you play sports?
I'm a golfer. Yeah, I played football.
Okay. Now, Hueytown's got a checkered past. Sometimes it's really good in football. Sometimes not so good. So how were you when you played?
I fell really in a strange time. We actually had a 2 years, sophomore and junior year, we were solid. We went to some playoff.
Okay.
Went to my junior year, we actually went to the third round, so we were strong. And then
That's a pretty good season for you.
Oh, it was a solid season. And then funny thing, senior year we totally fell off. We got a new coach. And
what was the okay, what was the coach's name?
I couldn't even tell you his name at this point.
Did y'all not win a game, right?
No.
Yeah, I remember that year.
We totally got wiped that year. Coach Battles was our coach prior to that.
Coach Battles was a really good coach.
We were solid.
Yeah.
We were a really, really tough team and fell off after that. So,
now, you were good enough to go play college? You think Alabama and Auburn were looking at you? Or
No. I could run. I was fast. I actually had some teams ask for me to play baseball and run bases.
Wow.
But I wasn't big enough to play football. Yeah. I probably weighed 145 pounds when I graduated high school. I ran a 4.340.
You ran a 4.340?
Yeah.
I mean, that's NFL fast.
I could fly, but I wasn't big enough to.
Should have been some Olympics going on with you.
I would have been splat on the windshield with the college guys.
Now, I was saying that your mom worked at U.S. Steel.
Yep.
And
mom
your
worked at U.S. Steel.
Dad was a coal miner.
I was a coal miner for Jim Walter. Yep.
So you grew up with hardworking parents. Those are not two easy jobs.
No. My parents, I've spent more time with my parents since you know, getting out of school and growing up than I ever did when I was young. My parents were at work pretty much all the time.
You know, I've had some family that did some coal mining, and that, you know, people don't understand. That's not a job where you can just kind of halfway do it. You know, you don't just feel like it. You got to go to work and be prepared to work. That is a job.
Yeah. Once you go in the hole, you're down there.
Yeah, there's no coming out until they come out.
Nah.
So you probably had a pretty good work ethic from your parents, I'm sure, with those two jobs.
Yeah. I mean, my folks pretty much said, you know, hey, listen, do good in school. you know, keep your nose clean kind of thing, and, you know, do better than us. But at the same time, you know, hard work was the backdrop to everything. You know, get after it, get out there, and make something happen.
Graduating high school, did you go off to college? Did you go to work? What happened after high school?
I went to UAB. Actually had a academic scholarship and went to UAB, but kind of floated around in there. Really yeah. didn't know what I wanted to do, and it got to a point where my dad was like, hey, listen, you know.
Sway some money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pick something or whatever. And he asked me, actually, what do you want to do with your life? You know, what can you see you doing long term? And at the time, all I cared about was motorcycles. And of course, being, I don't know, at the time, I was probably like 21, something like that. And he said, you know, you think you can make a living with motorcycles? And, you know, 21-year-old man knows everything. So I said, yeah, I can do it, you know. So anyway, I actually ended up dropping out of college and opening up a business here in Hueytown, a motorcycle shop.
Okay. So you were able to make a living, technically, with 20 motorcycles.
Years. Yeah. 20 years I made a living doing that here in Hueytown.
Was that Rider's Connection?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was a huge blessing for me, and it was really furthering my education, if you will, because owning a business and actually having to make things work and, you know, having employees and dealing with the public and all that, you know, was definitely an education for sure.
So having a business for 19 years, you know, when you're the boss and it's your business, it all goes through you.
Yes.
And so, you know, if people calling sick or this, or the people quit on you, the store's got to open.
That's it.
So I bet you had to work some crazy hours.
I did. And I worked some really, really late nights too. You know, when things were promised, you know, customers would have races or, you know, different bike rallies and stuff they were trying to get to. You know, things were promised and had a deadline. So it had to be done, you know, whether my guys were able to do it or not. Sometimes I was there 2 or 3, 4 o'clock in the morning making sure it left the next day.
So while you had your business, when did the seed start getting planted for Mission 44? When did it start? When did you start to think, okay, this, I want to try something different. This is what I want to do.
I actually, that really came from a relationship with Christ. I didn't really have God in my life in my younger years. And not, we went to churches as kids, you know, my mom had us in church, but, you know, I didn't have a personal relationship with Christ at the time. So later in life, as, you know, difficulties came along, that happened for everybody, you know, through business, through marriage, you know, being a father and all these things, my relationship with Christ actually occurred at that point. And that's kind of where the change in my life happened. I started volunteering at Children's in Birmingham.
Okay.
We did like a Friday night pizza and bingo night for the family and kids at the hospital. And, you know, it took me out of my normal routine weekend fun into something a little bit more positive. And
a little more serious.
Way more serious and more fulfilling.
Yeah.
It was so much more fulfilling. And so over the time of volunteering there at the hospital and getting to know these kids and their parents and what they were really going through, you know, that's kind of how Mission 44 started to evolve, realizing that, hey, they need more than pizza and bingo on Friday nights. You know, they have immediate needs that are way bigger than this. And, you know, hey, let's figure out a way to fill that need. So that's kind of where it all started. You know, and that was halfway through the Rider's Connection time. I was probably in the motorcycle business for, I don't know, maybe 10 years at that point when that kind of all birthed.
Mission 44. So it's nonprofit, and you basically try to raise money for the families of terminally ill children, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Wow. I mean, you probably see some things that most people can't understand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, these families don't always have the best outcome, you know, for their, you know, situation. But what we try to do is make sure during the time that they're going through this difficulty, that we lighten the load a little bit, you know, in whatever way that is. And it's through a personal relationship. These families I speak to on the daily, they know me. They know my life and what's going on in my life just as much as I know. You know, we're family. We love each other. That's the kind of relationship that we have. And I feel like that's the way you can best help someone. You know, there's a lot of great organizations out there, and thank God for them. But the personal disconnect is where Mission 44 is a little different than the rest of them. You know, we meet financial needs, car notes, house notes, things like that. But the one-on-one is very important. You know, being able to have a relationship with these families, pray with them, you know, and be able to really know, hey, they need their car paid off.
Yeah.
You know, this is vital right now. Or they need to, you know, a plane ticket to go, you know, for a special treatment or whatever. That personal one-on-one, or it could be groceries. You know, hey, things are tight right now. You know, we need some groceries today. And being able to know that need and feel that need immediately is what we're all about at Mission 44.
Grant, it seems like, just listening to you, that there are probably organizations out there that may, you know, they can get money, they can do this, but ultimately that's where it stops. With you, it doesn't stop.
No, it does not stop. You know, we've lost some kids through this journey, and that still doesn't stop our relationship with these families. They still are going through struggles and transitions and things like that. So it's not like, hey, you know, it's the end of the road here. You don't need this anymore. That's the whole personal contact, you know, being able to say, listen, you are family. You are a part of Mission 44 now, and we're going to be with you for the duration. You know, whether that's therapy for the family, you know, the remaining family members or whatever, that, or just being a friend, someone to reach out to and say, hey, I'm struggling right now. You know, that's what we want that personal connection for.
What is the mindset of a lot of these families? Like, when you hear the word terminally, you know pretty much where it's going. You don't know when. Yeah. But what is the mindset of the parents that you deal with? How do they cope? I would think it'd be very difficult.
It is. And really, that is probably the hardest thing for us to kind of juggle, is everyone's different.
Yeah.
So, you know, this particular mom may be able to cope with the situation a little better than this other mom or dad or sibling or vice versa. And there's so many different dynamics to the whole thing. I mean, you look at it and there's things that a lot of people don't even recognize. We've even had one young man even have the thought of suicide, and he's just a sibling, because you think, okay, we need to focus on this one particular child. Well, if you've got 2, 3, or 4 other ones, they're still kids. They're still important. They still, you know, it's very hard for a parent, especially a single parent, sometimes to be able to be everywhere all the time. You know what I mean? And who needs more resources? Who needs more time? Who needs more invested in them? You know, you could save one child and lose the other one in the process. So there's a lot more to it than just saying, hey, we've got money and we can prop you up. You know, there's a lot of different avenues that disaster can happen in a family when they're in the midst of this.
When it comes to raising money or getting the money, do you go through corporate sponsorships? Are you going to local businesses? How do people donate? How can people help? What can people do?
Okay, so majority at this point has really came locally.
I mean,
Hueytown has been huge as far as supporting what we do. We do have some corporate sponsors from time to time that come in and out, but mostly it's been local people just saying, hey, you know, I got a heart for what you're doing, and you know, I want to be a part of it. And it's not just all about the money. It's about sharing, you know, sharing what we're about, who we are, and what we're trying to do. I've had some people just share what we're about and link us up with people who could really pour resources in. And I think a lot of times people go, well, I don't really have any money to help you. Well, that's not necessarily what we need. You know, the networking side of it and the sharing, obviously the prayers that, you know, people put into these families are huge, you know, because we're praying for healing and understanding and all, you know, wisdom for these families. That's just as powerful, if not really more powerful, than the monetary side of it. So we have a website. It's m44.org. You can go on there. It's a secure website where you can donate. We have several different fundraisers throughout the year that we do through Facebook and different things. Usually try to do a couple crazy things. I've done 24-hour motorcycle races. Rode a mini bike across the country from Los Angeles back here to Hueytown last year.
Rode a mini bike?
Yeah, that was a 13-day journey. I had a backpack and a fishing pole and a bar of soap and flew out to Los Angeles, got on a little mini bike and rode it back home. It was a 3,300-mile trip. The crazy thing about it was we raised just enough money to pay a mother's car off. Her son has leukemia. So
it was worth it.
Oh, yeah. It was, yeah, definitely worth it. Rode a mountain bike for 1,000 miles. did 13,000 push-ups in 1 month. I just do all kind of crazy things to bring attention to our cause, but obviously the cause sells itself.
Mission 44, where'd you come up with the name for Mission 44?
So the number 44 has actually been stuck to me my whole life. So even I played Golden Bear football here in Hueytown.
And that was state champ.
Well, that was the number that was given to me. You know, I've never requested, never asked for it. And then when I went to Pittman, the middle school, playing football there, that was the number that was given to me. Racing dirt bikes, I've ended up with that number multiple times. So just kind of been stuck with the 44 thing. The mission is God's. I mean, Mission 44 is not mine. It's God's mission. I just get a front seat, you know, along the way. So that's kind of where it came from.
I would think your faith would have to be strong, because there's got to be times where you probably get close and the inevitable happens. Does your faith has to help you with that, because there's got to be something, because that would be very tough.
I think that's probably the greatest thing that I have in my arsenal is my faith. We lost a young man, a 10-year-old boy, Corey, about a month ago, matter of fact. I was a pallbearer at his service, and I was very close to this young man and had, you know, been friends with him and his family for a couple years now. And that was very tough. But for me, with my faith, my tears were like with Jesus. I was crying for his family and his friends and all of those people that were hurting. I know where Corey is, and I know
much better spot,
much better. And I knew that, you know, God had a plan for all that in the beginning, you know. Obviously our hopes and prayers were for more, but, this was what he had, you know, and I know that's the best outcome because it's what he had. But yeah, my faith is what pushes me to go right on through with the next family and the next kids and just being there for them, you know. So important.
I would think it's hard for people to wrap their head around that. You sit there and you think about, why does a 10-year-old have to pass away? Why does a 7-year-old? It just doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem fair. So I'm guessing what you have to do is you have to just basically compartmentalize all that and find a way to help the family understand this is it. This is why things happen.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole idea behind the personal relationship. You know, being able to share my faith in Christ with these families is so important for them. I mean, Corey's little brother, Michael, has already given his life to Christ. You know, and I can't say for God what his plan is, but who's to say that Michael's road was going to be terrible? And, you know, through this journey with Corey, now they're both getting to go to heaven and go home, you know. And who knows who else? His life has been impacted with Corey's life. And ultimately, that's our goal, is to get home. You know, we're all just here, soldiers for each other. I mean, just like you guys sitting here right now, you know, you get up every day and the world tells you to take. Do the best you can, get as much as you can, and hold on to it, and be the greatest you can be. But that's not really the truth. The truth is we're supposed to be here for each other. You guys sit here in this room and you support each other and you enjoy the same thing together and you lift each other up when you get the chance and opportunity. And that's what we're supposed to do, you know, as Christians and as human beings. And so, you know, I want to every day be better tomorrow than I was the day before, but not for me, but for you guys, for the people I come in contact with. You know, I want to be a blessing to everybody that I meet, and I hope that everybody gets that same feeling from me and takes it down the road and gives it to somebody else, because we're all in this together, whether you believe it or think it or not. We're all in this together, and loving and supporting each other and lifting each other up takes us all to a greater level, you know, and then ultimately gets us home where we all long to be.
You mentioned Hueytown, growing up here, the great community, and you mentioned that you would not be able to do it without this community. Talk a little bit about Hueytown and just what Hueytown means to Mission 44.
Really just being able to be me. I'm kind of a strange character. You know,
I don't agree with that. I think you're awesome here.
Well, I appreciate that, but my ideas are kind of wild and far fetched out there. You know, when I told people I was going to ride a mini bike across the country, you know, it's like, okay, here we go. It's another crazy idea. But this community has always supported that crazy in me, you know, and what crazy ideas I come up with. And you know, anybody can get on Facebook and create a page and say, hey, give me some money.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to do good with it. And that takes a lot of trust and a lot of faith for people to do that with their hard-earned money. And this community has done that. You know, they have backed me up and they have, you know, poured their money into what I believe in and in my cause. And we've been able to impact a lot of lives due to that. And I'm very, very thankful for this community and everybody who's not only just donated, but bought a T-shirt, stuck a sticker on their car, you know, or just told somebody, hey, you know, if you're looking for somewhere to donate, this guy right here is doing good things, you know. It's powerful, and I'm thankful for it.
So mention once again, like, anybody that wants to volunteer, anybody that wants to help, anybody that wants to give money to this great cause, how can they do that?
All right, so we have a Mission 44 Facebook page that is – we update regularly and share some of the families and what's going on with them in their lives, and you know, obviously our fundraisers and our next events and things like that. And we also have the website too, m44.org. So you can message us as well through either one of those outlets, you know, if you have any kind of questions or concerns or want to be a part of it or support it or anything of that nature. We're prompt on, you know, responses.
Oh, this is awesome. So now that we've talked and the interview's over with, it's now time, Grant, for five questions. These questions are random. There is no rhyme or reason to them. Ladies and gentlemen, Cameron will have three of the questions. I will only do two. So are you ready, Cameron? You got three questions ready?
Yeah.
Okay. But you're not ready. Okay.
No. Let's go, Cameron.
I know. I mean, Cameron, you can do this. You're a co-host for a reason. Yeah, I don't have anybody on the air. You know, yeah. You can do this.
Jaslyn should be here.
Jaslyn should be here. We got to get her back on here. Okay, so I'll start. All right, so on vacation, any vacation you've ever taken, what was the best meal you had? And it could be anything. It could be anywhere. It could be, you know, you went to the mountains, went to Gulf Shores, went anywhere. What was the best meal you've ever had?
Wow.
It's tough. These five questions are hard. They're not easy for a reason.
That's very tough because I'm like a I only eat food to because I have to.
So you don't eat food because you enjoy it?
No. Okay. I'm not a foodie. So, okay. I mean, I could literally eat a can of Beanie Weenies for the rest of my life.
And you'd be fine.
Totally fine with that. It wouldn't bother me at all. So that's a tough one. I do like Popeye's chicken. So my family, if we go on a trip or whatever and I see Popeye's, I see like, okay, this is the best spot. And they're like, no.
Red beans and rice, outstanding at Popeye's. And the chicken is good. Biscuits are great. I'm telling you, I'm a Popeyes fan. I was at the mall not too long ago, and it's the first time I've been there in a while, and I see they have a Popeyes in the food court now. I got really excited.
Yes.
I didn't eat there because I had already eaten, but if I wouldn't have, so I'm going to give you that. So Popeyes works for me. All right, Cameron, go ahead.
Easy question. Many answers out there. I don't know. If you could travel to any country, where would you travel to?
I want to go to New Zealand, and I want to put one of those squirrel suits on and jump off of one of those cliffs that they always fly. You know, you fly, the closer you fly to the wall, the faster you feel like you're going.
Okay.
So I would say I've had that dream in my head for a long time. That was an easy question for me.
I like the squirrel suit. That's not something I expected to hear in that answer. So that's very good.
It's such a beautiful place, and I enjoy seeing things my eyes have never seen before. So, like when I came across the country from out west on the little bike, I didn't come straight home. Like, I just zigzagged along the way and filled my eyes full of all that out west. You know, went to the Grand Canyon and walked down into the bottom of the Grand Canyon and just soaked it all in. So, New Zealand is definitely...
Okay.
Would be a spot. That would be good.
You know, I went to the Grand Canyon, and it's really pretty. But after about 30 minutes, you just realize it's a big hole in the ground, and I'm ready to leave. Yeah, I mean, it's like huge. I'm like, this is good. This is nice and pretty, but I'm ready to leave now.
You have to do like me. And
Did you ride the donkey down?
I don't recommend it. The donkey is kind of a story there with the donkey. The donkey don't go down in there. The donkey only goes about half a mile.
Yeah, okay.
I took my little fanny pack with a bottle of water, and I thought I was going to be the big bad dude and go into the bottom. Well, the bottom's about 12, 13 miles before you get down to the bottom, to the river.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
Kind of deceiving, you know, until you come out at dark, you know, 9 hours later. Dehydrated and about dead.
Well, it's okay. Well, if you're listening, that's not the way to go to the Grand Canyon. Stick with the donkey.
It's a pretty sight looking up.
Or tour guide.
Yes.
All right. Last song, and this could be 20 years ago, the last song that you sang out loud, like in your car, in your living room, last song by yourself, just you by yourself, that was the last song you sang out loud.
I actually was singing Yankee Doodle when I walked in here. And I don't know where that came from. Okay. I was just Yankee Doodling across the parking lot.
Okay, well, listen, I mean, that's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe I saw the flag out front or something.
Get a little patriotic, I see. City council meeting going on, felt patriotic.
I'm very spontaneous Yankee and sporadic.
Cameron, you have the final two questions.
No.
Are you ready?
I don't know if my question makes sense.
Probably doesn't. It's
it
Cameron.
Probably doesn't, but...
Well, you know what?
Though, none of my answers have so far.
Let Grant decide if it makes sense or not.
Okay. Since you played football, I'm assuming you're a football person. That's what I'm going to assume. If you could pick two football teams to like go against each other, who would you pick?
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't?
No, I'm kidding.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I'm an Alabama fan, so I, you know.
That's twice tonight. I'm not having this. I'm not having this.
Do we get to pick what year? I mean,
yeah.
Some teams are good, some teams are bad, and some teams are, you know.
You can pick whatever you want, Grant. That's all of you.
Any team, any year, anything.
I would like to put the Alabama team, the Crimson Tide, in 92 when they won the championship against Auburn in 10 when they had Cam.
Yeah, that'd be a great game.
Championship. I think
Bama would probably win the game, but I think it'd be close simply because Cam was that good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was that good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
I love football. I do. So even though I'm an Alabama fan, I probably have watched way more other teams play football the last decade just because I enjoy a competitive game.
I'm in an SEC football fantasy league, so I watch pretty much every game on Saturdays. I mean, I've got two or three TVs. I'm an Auburn fan, but I'm keeping it because I got players playing. So I love football. And then I call football on Friday nights on the radio, so I can't get enough football.
I got you.
So that's a pretty good question, Ken.
No, that was a good question.
I'm going to give you some props on that. First time you did anything right so far.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Last question, final question.
It's going simple again, going back to football. Just your favorite football player.
I don't know if I should let you do that one because that's too easy for you because it's really, you're just basically copying the question beforehand.
Yeah. I'm going simple.
Oh, it's fine. Go ahead, Grant.
That is a tough one, though, really.
I'm going to give my props to that. I'm going to give props.
Probably.
It's going to be somebody from Alabama, right?
No.
No? Okay, okay.
No. All right. Probably Barry Sanders.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Probably maybe the best individual football season of a college player ever. I mean, he was great the year he won his Heisman, Oklahoma State. Yeah.
I just loved watching him, you know. Unfortunately, he lost a lot of football games.
Well, he played for a bad franchise.
Exactly.
But the thing about Barry Sanders that people don't remember, because if he doesn't retire early, he kills that rushing record from Walter Payton.
Oh, yeah.
And he destroys it.
He was like watching a little rat run around. Like, they couldn't get hands on him. Yeah. No, he was pretty phenomenal to watch.
A lot of fun. Well, Grant, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
And we want to get you back on again to see, to kind of update us and see how things are going.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Mission 44, please give time, money, whatever you can to this great, great cause. It has been such a pleasure. Our go-home song, it's summer, so I'm going to be throwing out some summer longs. We're going to have Surfing USA by the Beach Boys. I like it. It's summer. It's fun. So that's your go-home song for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Until we meet again, you've been listening to Chamber Chat. You'd see them wearing their baggies, Huarache sandals too, a bushy, bushy blonde hairdo, Surfing USA.